our good friend Audrey Anderson joins us now from Anderson Attorneys and Advisors. Audrey, good to chat with you. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you, John? Happy New Year.
Yeah, Happy New Year to you, too. Great to chat with you here in 2024. So what have you been up to? What are people calling you about? What's like the hot topic in at your firm?
It does seem like it's DCFS, and unfortunately, as kids get back to school, they're getting into trouble when they're heading back to school from the holiday break.
So a lot of stuff with kids getting in trouble and the DCFS stuff that we've spent a lot of time talking about. AndersonAA.com, by the way, where you can find out more about Audrey. You're a frequent guest of the program, and you've spent time as a defense attorney for a while now. But before then, you were part of the state's attorney's office in DuPage County. So you've handled things, broadly speaking, on both sides, but including, I imagine, interactions with DCFS on both sides.
Right. I've had a lot of experience as an attorney for a prosecutor and defense for DCFS. So it's interesting that they're always, unfortunately, in the news. But it gives me a great perspective because I see both sides.
All right. So DCFS, the Department of Children and Family Services, can you just like set the table on what they are tasked to do, who gives them the authority to do what, and we'll take it from there?
Sure. DCFS is a government agency, and their sole purpose is to protect children from abuse and neglect from a parent or adult, caregivers, or any family member that's an adult living with them.
They have the authority to essentially take kids from their homes, right?
Correct. They're really, truly the only authority in Illinois where they can come to a home, and if they believe that the issue is serious, that they can just take your kids, and you really have no choice. They take your kids, they put them in foster placement, and then you go to court.
So at some point, they do enter the judicial system in some way. This isn't just, it's they don't act on their own and they make the judge and jury and then we have to live with their decisions. But the actions that they take before you get to the judge can have big ramifications.
Very true. Very true. Because they can truly disrupt the family. They can say that it's voluntary for you to give your children to someone else for a safety plan, where you have supervised visits or you're limited in contact with them. And that's all before going to court. Or they can take your child and place them in a hospital. Or if you place your child in a hospital and you don't want them because they still have mental health or suicidal issues or if they're threatening to other family members, then DCFS can get involved and try to force you to take your children back when they believe your child is ready to come home.
How does, are there offices in every county, and is that how it works? Is it distributed like that, or is it just a statewide agency that kind of has its tentacles in every community?
Right, it's a statewide agency, and they have offices all over. Obviously, in the Chicagoland area, they have the most offices, and it gets fewer as they go downstate, but they do it by geographical region. So sometimes in the Collier counties from Cook, they overlap county-wise.
Could you give a little... I'm not saying a defense of DCFS, but could you give a little bit into what that job is like for a caseworker?
Oh, yeah. They have such a difficult job because anytime someone calls the DCFS hotline to report an allegation of abuse, even if it's frivolous or someone's just doing it to be hard on a parent or just being retribution towards an ex or someone, a neighbor, DCFS has to take every allegation seriously. So they're required to be at the home to see the children and interview the children within 24 hours of the hotline call. So there's a DCFS, many DCFS caseworkers on call 24 hours a day, 365 days a year, to go to random people's homes and interview them about allegations that could be true or not. And it's up to the caseworker to decide if these children are really in danger and are being threatened by an adult.
These caseworkers are often walking up to homes without police assistance, right? Like this is a... It could be a dangerous job. In fact, we've seen it can be a deadly job.
Right, unfortunately. So caseworkers really have no idea what they're walking into initially because a lot of times they're walking blind. They can't really, they don't necessarily have the time and luxury to reach out to a police department to ask for assistance. Now, if the allegation is something serious like severe physical abuse, sometimes a caseworker can reach out to a police department to see if there's an officer available to go with them. But a lot of times it's just single DCFS caseworkers walking up to a door. They don't wear bulletproof vests. They're just in clothes with an ID that they're from DCFS. So they can be walking in blind to a very dangerous situation.
Can you walk us through like what that typical interaction is like? I imagine the door rings. a parent likely opens the door. What happens next? Obviously, it depends on the specific scenario, but like, what's that like, that moment?
Right. So the caseworker, they don't have uniforms. They don't drive cars that are marked with DCFS. They're just in regular cars that they own. They're in regular clothes with an ID. They explain their name, who they work for, and they ask just to come inside and to see their children. So when they first ring a house or a doorbell or knock on your apartment, they don't tell you what's going on. They just say that they're from the Department of Children and Family Services and they must come inside to see your children. So as a parent or just a regular homeowner, why would you think to let them in? But really, you have to let them in to figure out what's going on.
You don't. They don't have to produce a warrant of any kind, or you have to let them in by law?
Well, yes. The administrative code for DCFS says that you should let them in, correct? And if you don't let them in, most likely they will come back with the police. And at that point, since you've escalated the situation, most likely then there's a greater possibility that they would remove the children from your home if you're not cooperative with them.
Okay, so they come in the door. Let's say you let them on in. Then it's what? Obviously, it depends on what is alleged, but is it a chat with the parents, with the kids next to them? Do they talk to the kids alone, individually? How does that work usually?
Right, so they see the children all by themselves separately. So you have a three-year-old, and they ask mom and dad or grandma and grandpa, whoever is the caregiver, to go to a different part of the home while they just talk to your two-year-old, your three-year-old, all by themselves. So it's hard to get sometimes accurate information from a child so young, or even if it's a teenager, to see a teenager, everyone talks to DCFS alone, and then they'll talk to the parents separately or guardians or the adults in the home to tell them what the allegation is and ask them a bunch of questions about the allegation reported to the hotline.
Are you allowed to quickly get a lawyer on the phone and get someone to the house?
You can, but a lot of times an attorney isn't going to be available so quickly. So you
right.
can ask to stop and change it for another day. But depending on the allegation, the caseworkers may say, sure, we can stop talking to you, but I'm going to remove your child from the home and place them somewhere safe. And so we can have a discussion about the allegations against you.
How frequent is the child, I guess I say how often is the child removed from the home? Is that a last resort moment, or is it happen more common than we think?
I think it unfortunately happens more often than we think, but the goal of these DCFS is to keep the family united together. And if a child has to be removed to place someplace else, the goal is reunification as quickly as possible. But I think it just depends on the allegation of that's coming. So if a parent is arrested driving a car and they're under the influence of alcohol and drugs, 100% the child will be removed and placed with someone, at least temporarily. But some other allegations, the caseworker can see, oh, it's just a mistake. There's really no danger to the child, so the child can remain at the home.
Did you say that if you get arrested for a DUI, is that with a kid in the car, DCFS will almost always take the kid away from you?
Well, they'll at least remove the child for at that point and place them with a family member while the investigation is going, just for a short time, and then the child will be returned to you perhaps within a few days or a week.
Okay. And thank you for walking through the step-by-step of this, Audrey, because we've had these conversations in the past, and I just want to make sure we all understand like how this process works before we even get into the investigation that WGN-TV did. So let's say they take a child from your home, which, as you said, is not always the case, of course, and there's a lot of times that they don't. Where does that kid go? Do they go in the backseat of their car? Is that when the police are called, or do they go with the DCF officer and go somewhere? Like, how does that work?
Right. So if it's a baby, a teenager, 17, they can take a newborn to a 17-year-old to almost their 18. The caseworker just goes, I will take the child, and then they walk out with the caseworker. So they give, if it's a baby, they have a car seat, and they go off with the caseworker. But the caseworker tries to arrange that the child go first to a family member. But before they can go to a family member, DCFS is the screen that family member to determine that they're appropriate in a safe placement. And if they can't find a family member, then it goes to a stranger, a foster parent that's already been screened.
So, like, are they going to, like, the facility, like, during this time while they do this?
Yes, they can go to a facility, or depending on the situation, they can just wait at the home until a family member can come to pick up the child. But if there is no family member, then, yes, the child goes to the DCFS office, regardless of the time of day, and they wait for a foster family to come and be open up and be available to have the child.
There's no doubt in my mind that there are insanely justified moments in which you need to remove a kid from a family. No doubt about it. I'm not passing any judgment on that. But regardless of the situation, I just picture parents screaming and holding on to their kids and not allowing them to be taken. These can be very tense moments, I imagine.
Oh, very tense, very volatile, especially if it's a younger child or a newborn. You know, there's so many issues for a newborn and a new mom having their child taken. Or if it's even like a little kid, 5 or 4, they don't understand what's going on. They only know their family. So to go into a car with a stranger, which parents are always saying, don't go with strangers, and then being taken to who knows where. And even if your child's taken, parents don't know where the DCFS office is or what's going on or the next step, because it's an overwhelming new process.
Okay, so then what is the next step? Let's say they find someone, you know, a family that they can go to for a little while. Does it then, how does the process, what happens next?
So then if the child is removed, then within 48 hours, typically you are in court, excluding weekends and holidays, before a judge to determine whether or not DCFS appropriately removed your child.
And this is with a, sometimes you have an attorney present, sometimes you don't. It's just the parent there, I don't want to say against a caseworker, but is that the two sides of the courtroom there?
Correct, right. So it's the prosecutor arguing for the DCFS, and then the parents, they have to hire an attorney, or if they can't afford one, then the public defender's office will get appointed.
Oh, okay. So is this like a court of law like we have in the judicial system, or is this like a special court with a judge assigned for this specific thing?
Right, so they're at courthouses in the juvenile abuse neglect courtroom. So it's a special judge that typically hears this, but at the regular courthouse.
Okay, makes sense to me. All right, tell you what, Audrey, we're already getting questions on the text line. We've kind of walked through the process of what happens. And after the news, I want to talk about then the next thing, that if your kid is going to be sent somewhere else for on a more semi-permanent basis, what happens? And then we'll go into the WGN investigation, which shows that kids are being sent and left in psychiatric hospitals and jails longer than necessary. I want to walk through all that. But we'll do that after the news here on WGN. Continuing our chat with Audrey Anderson from Anderson Attorneys and Advisors. And Audrey, the first half hour, we kind of broke down how DCFS works and the scenario in which they come to someone's house and kind of what happens to kids. And I wanted to pivot to talk about this report that WGN Investigates did on good old Channel 9 that really kind of prompted this annual report that had to come about, that shows nearly 300 kids in psychiatric hospitals longer than medically necessary, and that 45 youth in the state of Illinois in juvenile jail beyond release dates. How do we tackle this? Because, you know, the scenario you played out was when someone comes to your home and because a parent may have done something to a kid. Who are these kids? Are these kids that don't have homes, that did things wrong, and now they end up in a psychiatric hospital? I know it's a broad brush to paint with, Audrey, but kind of walk us through this report.
Sure. I actually have experience with clients, parents who have been in this situation. So it's a broad spectrum. It could be kids that don't have homes, that they have very bad mental health, psychiatric, or very aggressive tendencies. Or some are from wonderful, loving, fabulous parents that unfortunately these kids have such a severe mental health issue that they are safety threats and risks to themselves and other younger siblings or even parents at the home. So parents will call the police because their child is so out of control that they need to be committed to a mental health hospital.
No.
And so then they get committed to the mental health hospital, psychiatric unit, and then they are scheduled to be released because the doctors believe that they're no longer an immediate threat to themselves or others. But the problem is parents are concerned and don't want to take their children home because doctors may say, okay, yeah, well, the child is behaving. They're not in a threat anymore. But that just really, some argue, is just an immediate threat. Once they go home, they still need long-term care. They still are a threat generally to their family. So that's a lot of times while parents refuse to take their children from the hospital, or even if a child needs continuing medication or counseling, there's a lot of foster families that aren't equipped to handle a child that could be a threat or very aggressive physically. to other younger siblings and children or even adults in the home. So that's where the problem is.
This may seem like a really dumb question. What does DCFS have to do with this? I mean, I would think that, you know, if a kid needs to be taken away and put in a psychiatric hospital, this is a discussion between, you know, doctors and parents. Why is this DCFS's fault?
Right. So DCFS gets called when a parent refuses to take a child back from the hospital. They do that for a variety of reasons. They have younger children in the home, and so that child that's in the hospital has been very aggressive. So a parent says they can't risk the lives or the safety of their other children at home, so they refuse to take the child from the hospital. Police officers go and say, well, there's nothing we can do. We can't take custody of a child. We can't bring a child to a police department. So then DCFS gets called because there's a child who is what sometimes they refer to as a lockout because a parent refuses to take the child back home. So that's how DCFS gets involved, to find a place for the child.
Okay. Where do they go then? Do they go through the similar process of the other kids that have been taken from their homes and they try and find foster families? Like, what's supposed to happen next?
Right. So, unfortunately, they're supposed to be placed in a foster family. But for the small minority of children involved with DCFS, there aren't foster families that are specially licensed and equipped to sometimes deal with children that have aggressive tendencies. And we don't really have group homes or youth homes for children with mental health issues. I mean, we have juvenile jails that are called youth homes, but those are for kids that have criminal cases pending. But we don't really have a residential facility or enough beds in residential facilities for children that are a threat to themselves or others. So that's where the problem is. There's not enough beds in residential treatment facilities and not enough specially licensed foster parents who can take on a child in this responsibility of an aggressive young child or a teenager.
Hmm. I guess I'm then wondering, with this report showing 296 kids locked in psychiatric hospitals longer than medically necessary, obviously we don't know about each individual case, but if you're telling me a lot of times it's parents saying, they're still a danger, I cannot have them in my home, they're a danger to their siblings and perhaps us, and DCFS doesn't know exactly what to do with them, is staying in the psychiatric hospital, I don't know, I guess I'm saying, what is the... Is this a huge deal that they're still there?
Right. So you're right, because at least if the parents are saying they still have mental health issues, the hospital you would think is a great place for them. However,
right.
There is only limited resources and limited hospital beds available. So at a hospital, when any patient, a doctor thinks is safe to be discharged, the hospital doesn't want the responsibility anymore, and they feel like there's no need for that child or teenager to be there at the hospital and taking a bed with some other teenager or young child could have it. So the doctors and hospital staff feel, well, why are they here when we think that they're fine? And parents said, well, you're only seeing them on their best behavior. They're truly not fine for the long term.
What about the juveniles that are in jail beyond the release date? Is this a similar situation? No one's there essentially to pick them up?
Right. So that's the case, too. There isn't a parent that's willing to pick up the child, or sometimes a child stays or a teenager stays in the jail because the judge orders that they stay at the youth home, juvenile jail, until there's a treatment, residential treatment for substance abuse, alcohol, mental health, that a bed opens up. There aren't any beds available. So the kid just languishes in the juvenile jail while they're waiting placement in a residential treatment facility.
What's the fix, Audrey?
Right. I suppose money and space and personnel, but that's very hard to come by.
Yeah, for sure. It just is one of those reports where you read it and you get upset and then you go, this sucks. I don't know how else to say it, right? Like, boy,
right.
This is a mess. I hope they're able to get the resources that they need. They need it in a lot of different places. We have a lot of texts, Audrey. Do you mind taking a couple questions?
Sure.
Someone wants to know, even if nothing's upsetting at home, this is a grandparent, by the way, wondering, I think my kid's home's basically in great shape. Everything's fine. Is there a way, or is there a way to go through the process to be approved or certified as DCFS qualified just in case something were to happen that the kid has to be removed from? Do you know if that's possible, and should grandparents do that?
Well, there isn't a special process just for that in case you feel like your grandchildren will need a placement, but the only way that you could do that is if you become licensed as a foster or approved as a foster parent overall. So you can overall be approved as a foster parent, and I suppose just not accept other children who aren't family or grandchildren to you. But unfortunately, there is no way to be pre-approved in case something happens to your own grandchildren that I'm aware of.
Okay. All right. That's what I think they were wondering there, which makes sense, too. That would be good because, like you said, it may happen quickly, but if it's there's situations where it may not happen instantaneously, right?
Right. Right.
Okay. Someone wanted to know, and you know, we've talked about the AJ Friend case, the terrible case out of Crystal Lake. In that case, where the caseworkers, you know, there was drugs and so many other things that going on. They wanted to know, like, how are caseworkers screened themselves? I'm sure there is a process for caseworkers to make sure that they're on the up and up, at least as much as possible, right?
Right. They have to have a certain degree and background. And then there's continual and ongoing training. For caseworkers, there's a probationary period when they first get hired that they're shadowing caseworkers. There, once you're a caseworker on your own, then there's supervisory reviews. But don't forget, these caseworkers, they only see a snippet of life. So they go to a home, and if everything seems okay in the hour or so that they're there, there's a lot that can be hidden. A family can pull things together quickly and try to hold it together for an hour or for random visits. But caseworkers do have ongoing training. There's supervisors that have ongoing training. The supervisors have supervisors that get involved as well. So there's a lot of layers of protection and education throughout the DCFS system for all the caseworkers.
Okay, one more question. Can you recommend a tile grout cleaning company in downtown Chicago? Oh, that was from David Hochberg's show, Audrey. You don't probably have one off the top of your head, do you?
No, I checked WGN for that, who they use.
Hey, that's the right answer. Audrey, I appreciate you diving into this issue. It's always a sensitive one to talk through, and that's why we go to you, the expert on this sort of stuff. Audrey can be reached at 630-877-5800, andersonaa.com, because Audrey, if any parent's in one of these circumstances, we've talked about ex-spouses, vengeful spouses, calling DCFS to place complaints, maybe neighbors that were concerned legitimately, but they were mistaken at what they saw, they called. If you're one of those parents and DCF shows on the door, at what point should they be calling you?
As soon as DCFS shows up, they should at least reach out to an attorney to get advice as to what's the process to go through all this.
For sure. And Audrey Anderson, I know you do a lot of other work, not only juveniles, all sorts of defense work, right?
Correct. All sorts of defense work for juveniles, adults, from traffic to murder, so everything in between.
Boy, that's the slogan you like to end with, Audrey. Every time you say that, I'm like, the last thing you're going to say is murder?
Yeah.
But hey.
I should stop the opposite, from murder down to traffic defense.
There you go. I like that. 630-877-5800. Audrey, good to talk to you. Thanks for joining us, okay?
You too. Have a great night. Thanks.
Yeah, you too. We'll take a break. We'll talk with Mike Leonard after this on Let's Get Legal, powered by the Illinois State Bar Association on WGN.